The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, I didn't think this was even possible, but the Las Vegas investigation continues to get even more bizarre. It has been 3 weeks, and neither the FBI nor the police have given us a possible motive. We haven't seen a single surveillance video, a photo. On top of that, not only do we not know what's going on, but the police seem not to know either. They've released three different timelines for the attack. All three seem to revolve around and conflict with the time hotel security guard, Jesus Campos, entered the shooter's room on the 32nd floor. Now, Campos is the most significant eyewitness to the attack. So everyone is trying to get his story. He was set last Thursday to do just that. And all the major news outlets gathered at the Vegas hotel minutes before the interviews were set to kick off. He just vanished. The security union rep was told that he was taken for a minor emergency clinic for health reasons, but that's the last time anybody saw him. Not even his neighbors knew where he was until yesterday, when we found him on the set of the Ellen DeGeneres show. So hang on. Here we have the key witness in the worst mass shooting in modern history. The investigation is being questioned. The timelines for the attack are in conflict. The man who could clear all of this up is interviewed on a comedian's talk show. It was 60 Minutes busy. I mean, was this to ensure that no hard follow-up questions would be asked? I want you to know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist on this at all. I think what they're covering up is the hotel just really dropped the ball. I don't think there's any conspiracy. I think it's just people covering their own butts. And that's how the interview played out yesterday. No hard questions were asked. He told his story. It was compelling. His account of the events seemed to confirm the third timeline police released last Friday. He was dispatched to the 32nd floor at 9:59. He was shot in the leg by Paddock around 10:04. The massacre began at 10:05. He was also quick to add that he radioed for backup as soon as he was shot. And this isn't to knock Ellen, but had this been, even Anderson Cooper, he might have asked why it took the officers 13 minutes after he was shot to reach the 32nd floor. Is there only one elevator? It was also 2 minutes after Paddock had stopped firing on the crowd. An investigative journalist might have said, why? Why was it taking so long? Did the hotel take their time informing police? That seems to be the critical question. Ellen made sure to mention that this was the only interview Campos would give. Who made that decision? Are we going to get the full story on this? We may never know, but as every day goes by, this story just gets weirder and weirder.
Thursday, October 19th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So let's start with some audio from Ellen. Here is Jesus Campos on. You don't have them yet? Sorry, I thought I asked before we went on the air. Okay, well, when we get them, will you alert me? What's really bizarre is, and again, I don't think this is because this was a setup or anything like that. I think this is the hotel security not being competent. Somebody didn't call the police on time. Something happened, and somebody is covering their butt for insurance reasons or illegal reasons. It's not a conspiracy. It's just somebody doing what they have to do, they think, to be able to not get in trouble with either the shareholders, the insurance company, or the law. You have the audio now. Here it is.
I'm doing better each day. Slowly but surely, just healing physically and mentally. I just want to mention all the people that assisted that night, whether it was Metro, the FBI, the community, especially coming together to help everyone in need. Everyone came together to help that night, even in the darkest hour.
Okay, next cut, please.
There was a metal bracket holding the door in place.
And when you saw that, did you think, that's weird, why would somebody put brackets on a door?
Yeah, that's just out of the ordinary. As I was walking down, I heard rapid fire. And at first, I took cover. I felt a burning sensation. I went to go lift my pant leg up, and I saw the blood. That's when I called it in on my radio that shots have been fired.
And no follow-up question. Why did it take so long? Our chief researcher, who's been watching this story unfold for a while, Jason Batrill, is with us. Jason, would you agree with me that it's not a conspiracy? There's somebody just covering their butt?
Oh, absolutely. But the way that it's being handled, it's fueling people that want to find a conspiracy theory
right.
in these things. Now, you could tell on this, in this interview that Ellen already knew the answers to all the questions. She already knew the story. She was literally there just to set him up and cue him into the
sure.
timeline and the story that they wanted to be told. So there literally was no like, yeah, but why did this happen? Like,
so who is it? Who is it? Do you think is pulling the string on this? Who do you have any idea of who he might be protecting or why this is happening? Because this is a news story. This should have gone to a journalist. And seeing that this is his only interview, he either got paid a lot of money for it,
which he didn't. They talked about that actually in there.
Yeah.
They donated, I think, $25,000 to a charity on their behalf. But they did not.
So
they did not get
Yeah. Who's pulling the strings on this one?
Well, got to be the hotel.
Couldn't it be him? I mean, he doesn't seem to want to do interviews. And so isn't there a possibility that he just said, look, I'll do one interview. I'll do it with Ellen. I mean, there's, you know, he's an individual, right? And he can make his own choices. He doesn't have to do interviews with all these journalists to get the truth. There's no requirement for him to do so.
I guess that's fair because he obviously didn't look comfortable when he was doing this. He did not look like he wanted to do it. But why did he show up last Thursday to get this brief with all, why'd they confirm all the interviews? He's there to do them. And just minutes before, he just takes off.
Okay, so that could be explained, again, if we go with Stu's theory, that he's uncomfortable, he hates it, he didn't want to do it, he got stage fright on Thursday and just couldn't, just hyperventilated, and they took him for to a minor medical place because he was just having a panic attack.
I mean, that doesn't mean that that's the truth, but that's a plausible theory as to why this could be happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, the guy's also recovering from a gunshot wound. You know, like, I mean, maybe he doesn't feel like running around on camera everywhere. I don't think I would.
But traveling to Vegas and going on the most high-profile show in Hollywood, he felt fine with that.
Well, I mean, it's a different type of interview, right? You're not going to get pushback. You're not going to get deep questioning from Ellen.
And that's the entire point.
But that
and
might be what he chose, right? I mean, it might be what I chose, too. I mean, Ellen's going to present him as a sympathetic character, which I think he is. I mean, there's no reason to believe he isn't.
I guess I'm more apt to buy into somebody is trying to keep this out of tough questions for insurance reasons or whatever, and not having anything to do with the shooter, just having everything to do with how they responded. Somebody dropped the ball. There's too much time went by. Way too much time.
Is there?
For someone, have you been to a casino?
No, I've never been to one.
Right.
In my life.
So,
the
cameras are everywhere.
They are.
And they you know, this went on for a long time. The cameras are everywhere. They've never released any of the footage of him coming in. They said, a week later, well, you know what? It looks like he was here 2 days before. How does your computer system not tell you that?
There's definitely been some weird stuff being reported in the differences of the timelines.
Right. And I don't think, again, I think it is something, some incompetence that happened at the hotel, and the hotel is panicked because, guys, you didn't have this. You didn't do this. That opens us up for X, Y, and Z.
I think that's exactly what they figured out in that prep session, because they said there was a member, there was a rep from the security union, and there were reps from the MGM Grand all in this room prepping him. So I think as they're just rapid firing questions coming at him in from different angles to see if he would trip up, whatever, that they were like, look, there is no way he can get through this without somebody looking bad, whether it's the police on this side or it's the hotel. I personally think it was the hotel. So I think they were like, you know, forget it. I think there's already some lawsuits that are being
they're already been filed, right? I mean, so they're going to obviously have some liability on this. And surely there are people within Mandalay Bay, MGM, that are trying to minimize that liability. I think that's absolutely true and could explain this. I'm not shooting down the theory of that that's the reason. But I mean, also, like, when it comes to the timeline, it's like, well, yeah, it was. It seems weird in retrospect, especially when we know the sort of scale of all of it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, remember, the security guard, the reason why the security guard got shot is because the security guard was on the floor. He went up there to investigate something that was weird.
Right. No, right? I have
so they
no,
did show up there.
Yeah. Have no problem with that. I have problems with man down. And what is it? 18 minutes later.
But again, I don't know. We don't know this yet. And we may never know it, at least until there's a real report done later. But I mean, I don't, you know, Jason, you've done security for years, you know, military background, all this stuff. The people who are working security for Mandalay Bay, if they believe there is an automatic weapon going on, are they going to just race up with nothing to that floor? Is that the response? I mean, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I don't. Maybe they're supposed to. Maybe you just send up 25 security guards.
Yeah,
up to
hang
the floor.
On just a second. See, this is the problem. You know, if this happened in a Holiday Inn, no,
nothing. Yeah.
But you're talking about a casino, which is you know, has more cameras than the average prison.
Right, but they wouldn't have cameras inside the room.
No. Hang on just a second. Have more cameras, meaning they have their own, you know, they. I'll bet you that each of these casinos has their own holding cells for people until the police arrive. I mean, they haven't hired the guys that you see at the mall.
No, I know. But I mean, to arrange the sort of security that would be required to push back against this type of person might take 8 minutes. That doesn't seem like an insane amount of time.
So there are active shooter scenarios that they would have rehearsed and already done and be prepared to respond to. And there are armed security in these hotels. So, yes, they would have initiated that plan.
Right.
Now, if they would have. So there's something that every security industry knows is they have checklists specifically for liability. So in some of these cases, they'll go down and say, did you do this? Did you do this? Now, I want to point out that I think Campos, it sounded like he did everything correct. He responded the way he was supposed to. He radioed it in. Then he also mentioned that he got off the radio and then switched to cell phone, which is exactly per procedure to clear radio traffic. So Campos, by all intents and purposes, sounds like the hero that they're telling him to be. He sounds like he's legit. Now, the problem is, what was going on? Were they following that checklist in the security office afterwards? The first thing would be call 911. Call police. Now, if they skip that, I could see why they'd be like, crap.
Even if it was a mistake. They're just, and now looking at it and saying, wow, we should have called right away.
Because they didn't, my guess would be there was a trip up in that liability checklist. And now they're like, okay, since this happened and it goes to that timeline, which explains why they've changed it, now we're open to these $1 million lawsuits. And that's why they did
that.
And
I think it's something small, relatively insignificant to the average person, but to an attorney with millions of dollars on the line, they're just like, shut it down. Just shut it down.
I've heard people too questioning the afterwards. So like, he stopped shooting. They do get up there and they don't enter right away.
Right.
Now they're reporting on this. What you know, the reporting from the people who were there is he had wires, which we found out later were camera wires, but wires running from outside the building in under the door into the room. There's no shooting going on, and they waited, you know, like an hour, basically, to actually go in. Wouldn't it be, if there is no shooting, and they seem to believe this guy had killed himself, although they hadn't confirmed it yet, there was wires running in there, you're thinking explosives, right?
Yes.
You have to clear probably that entire wing of the Mandalay Bay before you would actually enter that, thinking it could actually go off. So that hour doesn't seem that crazy to me.
I'm less concerned with, you're exactly right, and they can't just barge in because they don't know what's been happening, and they also wouldn't know how many shooters are up there. There could be 20 shooters up there for all they know. So I don't critique the way the police handled it when they got there. I'm just a little bit curious about how long it took them to get there. That's the only part. Like, you're exactly right. There's so many things that they have to check for, but they can't just go willy-nilly barging in, kicking the door in.
Yeah. I know they said what it was. I've heard 8 and 11 minutes in that time, from the time he radioed to the time they actually got up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you've been to these casinos before. It's 2 minutes just to get up that elevator. I mean,
I agree. I don't know what happened. I don't think there is a conspiracy with the shooter or with police, or it was a setup or anything that you're reading online from this nonsense. I do believe that something small happened and people are covering their butt. And the reason why I keep bringing this up and we are focusing on this is what causes conspiracy theories to grow. Mm. Something small, somebody trying to protect their asset, with the first three letters being emphasized, and all they do is put him on Ellen. So they don't ask any questions. They don't go deep with him. They don't ask him and corner him into anything that he's going to do. So everybody can walk away and then have a fresh start at the trial. So don't give them any ammunition for the trial that we're going to have a hard time, you know, defending. Even if it wasn't, that they did something wrong, they just don't. He may be so loose and so, you know, bad at this that, you know, he could say something that isn't quite right, and then it's used against us in the trial. There's millions of dollars at stake, and I just wish that we could put the $1 million and millions of dollars in the rearview mirror and just do the right thing for the Republic right now, which is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help you God. If you travel for business, you know that it's a game of wins and losses. Opening the overhead bin right above your seat and finding that there's room for your carry-on, that is a big win. Miss the wake-up call, that's a big loss. Buying your next business trip with Upside.com, huge win for several reasons. One, you are going to spend such little time making these decisions. The average person spends about 90 minutes, I think it's like 85 minutes, trying to book all of their travel. What a waste of time. And Upside knows this. So they have put together the best available prices for flights, hotel, and rental cars, all in one place. And you have to verify. The first time you're going to use it, you're going to spend 90 minutes, probably just like everybody else, just because you're going to go, well, I got to be able to get a better price than that, right? I mean, how are they doing this? It's got to be available, and you're not going to find it. They also show you ways that you can even get less, be charged less for your airfare or your hotel. You leave an hour earlier or an hour later, et cetera, et cetera. And they will show you ways that you can save your company even more money. So that incentivizes your company to ask you to do Upside. But you're the one doing it. That's why Upside has the 6-star treatment from customer service specialists. They are navigators. They will help you do it to reduce the time, reduce the confusion, make sure you're on track. And every time you save money for your company, you're incentivized because you get money back in an Amazon.com account. So you can buy something from Amazon. You get a guarantee of $100 gift card to Amazon for booking your first trip. And every time that you book something and you save money, they just add money to that. $100 gift card from Amazon.com right now, because you deserve a better business trip. It is Upside.com. Use the promo code Beck. See site for complete details. Minimum purchase is required. It's Upside.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck.
No, there's nothing. Nothing happening with the shooting. No, that's...
Glenn Beck.
I mean, it's the shooting thing is ridiculous, the conspiracy theory. but I do have a conspiracy theory that is gaining traction now, and the White House refuses to talk about it.
They're hiding it.
They haven't answered questions.
They're suppressing the information.
Nobody is even. They're afraid to even ask the White House.
Oh my gosh! Yes. It's going that deep.
It's going that deep.
Oh, no.
The Melania body double conspiracy. Yes, we're brave enough to open that can of worms next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, is Donald Trump hiding the fact that his wife doesn't want to be seen around him, and therefore he's using a body double?
You suggested it, so yes.
Wait,
Fully believe it.
Is that
now
the standard now?
Well, I saw it once or heard it once.
Right.
Or thought of it myself. So
but you
yes,
heard
I
it from
it.
Me. It wasn't on Twitter. So does it carry as much
Should
credibility?
We tweet that right now? So
well,
that
it has been on Twitter. You just didn't hear it from me. But if I tell you I saw it on Twitter.
Well, that's a good source.
Okay,
if you tell me you saw it on Twitter, I'm only trusting,
and it's all the rage on Facebook.
Oh, my gosh. So multiple social networks have confirmed this?
Multiple sources, Stu. Gosh. Multiple sources. There is a CNN video shot from Friday that claims to show that Donald Trump is standing on the White House lawn with an imposter.
Mm-hmm. Notice right away, by the way, if you happen to be listening to this, Glenn's spinning of this story claims to show. Have you seen the video?
Actually,
it's right there.
No, I actually,
it's right in front of your eyes.
I actually have seen the video. The theory seems to be that Andrea Wagner Burton, she posted on Facebook that she found the video suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
She said, not only is the first lady dressed like a cartoon version of an undercover spy, but at the 3-minute mark of the video, for some odd reason, Donald Trump says, my wife, Melina, who happens to be right here. Well, no, he says Melania. Maybe you heard Melina or you can't spell. But that's, in watching the video, that's exactly how he talks. My wife, he talks about himself in third person. My wife, Melania, who's right here.
Talking about himself.
Right.
And Donald Trump said to that person over there, Melania.
That's right. According to an Inquisitor article, searches for Melania Trump double.
So they have the Inquisitors on this too?
Yes, the Inquisitor.
Okay.
Has risen 250% on Google since Friday. Now, I think it's important to point out that since no one was searching for Melania Trump body double on Thursday, a 250% increase is not that big of a deal.
a 2 to 5?
Yeah, it's really not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. Melania double conspiracy, according to Wagner Burton's post, has been shared over 100,000 times. And there are people jumping on the fake Melania bandwagon. I will tell you that if I have time today, I am going to be talking to the artist in our art department and just ask if they want to screw off for 20 minutes because I kind of want to get in on the body double bandwagon.
Really?
You
take
do.
It, well, all this traffic, traffic. It's
with
up 250%.
250%. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody was searching for it on glennbeck.com. We could go up 300% if I just jump on this. Now, the question is, if I may, take this one step further. Who is Jeff Sessions talking about yesterday when he is testifying in front of Congress about imprisoning journalists? Listen.
And I'll ask the same question. Will you commit to not putting reporters in jail for doing their jobs?
Well, I don't know that I can make a blanket commitment to that effect. But I would say this. We've not taken any aggressive action against the media at this point.
Great. There's a lot to talk about there. But is it possible that this is coming from the Melania Trump body double?
Right.
You jump. I'm sketchy now whether I want to jump into that with both feet.
Because that is clearly, I mean, considering the point, I mean, just all the evidence, which shows that you talked about one and then the other in that order.
Right.
Shows me, as an observer, exactly that what they meant by not jailing any journalists meant traditional journalists who are avoiding the Melania Trump story.
Have you...
Those that are covering it
have
are
Have you read anybody denying that?
I have not.
Trump denied that?
They won't even ask
they
about
it. They won't even ask about it. They don't want you to ask about it.
This conspiracy world would be a fun thing to do.
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine? I mean, how easy and fun. If you didn't care the damage that is being done to the country because of this, it would be the greatest thing ever.
It really just has to come to a point where you've written off the country. If you can just get there.
Yeah. And people.
And people.
And human survival.
And human survival.
If you don't care about any of that, it would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
Well, you can say whatever you want. And right. You can always get clicks. You can always say the next person's in on it.
Oh, my gosh. May I, Stu?
I hope you do.
Now, I don't have any evidence of this, but I think I've just tied this together. What did we just say? That you have to not care about humanity. You have to care about, you know, no survival, et cetera, et cetera. Who does that sound like? Say it with me. Elon Musk.
Right? That's what I was going to say.
He's going to Mars because he's behind all of this.
I mean, now we have a legitimate source, Glenn Beck, saying it.
Right. So, I heard it on the radio.
Yeah.
Somebody quick tweet it as a second source.
I mean, I haven't seen it tweeted yet, but I'm going to believe it's out there. And that means that's confirmed again.
Why even check?
It's too good to check.
Right. Now, seeing that we now spent some time showing you how conspiracy theorists work and do their job, let's go back to Jeff Sessions and really look at what he did just say.
And I'll ask the same question. Will you commit to not putting reporters in jail for doing their jobs?
Answer yes.
Well, I don't know that I can make a blanket commitment to that effect. But I would say this. We've not taken any aggressive action against the media at this point.
Or any point in the future. If they're doing their job, no. We won't put them in jail? I mean, that doesn't seem like a hard question to answer.
This is a gift, right, to Sessions, the way it's worded, which is, of course you don't put them in jail for doing their jobs. Now, if they break the law...
Correct.
Right? Like, yes, you can put them theoretically in prison.
Correct.
And even if you're taking this stance where you're going to be tougher on the media and you're going to start pursuing the media in these controversial ways, you can still say... Well, of course, we're not going to put him in jail for doing their jobs. He can't even commit to that.
No, it's a really
which is weird.
That was a very disturbing remark.
And I like a lot of the stuff Sessions does. We don't beat up on Sessions.
Yeah,
that
no,
often.
I like Sessions. That's an easy one. That's an easy shot. That's an easy shot. You don't have to bank that one. It's just like boom, right into the pocket. Nope, not going to do that. Of course not. Absolutely not.
Because
why would we? First Amendment.
Right. Even if you're shady, you have an out. You could just be like, look, yeah, we didn't think they were doing their jobs that time. Yeah. I mean, there's a million outs to that.
Everybody lies under oath in Congress. What are you doing? Lie, man. Lie. No, of course not. It's called the Constitution. Yeah. We don't. Here's the idea. I mean, think of the signal that just sent to the rest of the world. Think of the signal that sends to all journalists. The government may become a government where we begin to jail journalists. And we already know the last president loved to do this. Mm-hmm. Did it more than any other president in history. The press didn't cover it. We rang the bell.
Some of the press did ring the bell on that one, but not as much as you would hope with Barack Obama. Because there were some media sources that were pretty pissed off about that. And,
yes.
And they did talk about how it was, you know, these things were Woodrow Wilson tools utilized more than anyone in history to go after journalists. But you're right. There wasn't the mainstream outrage. This is, again, when if Trump were to say this, and he did, basically, a couple weeks ago.
Yes, he did.
You know, we talked about it as well. It's bluster. You know, that's what O'Reilly was talking about when he was on. He's like, yeah, you got to look at that as just essentially bluster. He wants people to talk about the media and look at what they're doing. But he's just saying it in a way to get up a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. Jeff Sessions isn't that person.
No, he's not.
It's a strange It's a strange thing. And he says, you know, I don't want to make a blanket statement about this. You don't have to. There was one made a long time ago in the Constitution. It's called the First Amendment. It is a blanket statement. It is not a, there's no questions there. It is an absolute blanket statement covering everybody.
It is a natural law. It is something you have the right to express yourself. You have a right to be a journalist and do reporting. You don't need a license. You don't need anything from the government. I'm going to be the citizen press. That's what we have. And they don't like it. They don't like it because there are no secrets anymore. And so when you have a citizen press, that makes people in power very uncomfortable. And we've got to watch this line, especially with what's happening. We'll talk about this probably next hour with what's happening with Facebook and the ads. The government is now starting to say, you know what? We're going to start regulating ads. No, 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 no. I don't want the government regulating anything on the internet. You start having them regulate things on the internet, it doesn't stop. Because what they're going in for right now are regulating the ads that are bad for the republic, that are bad politically, that are causing more turmoil. Well, I've been warning you for a while that Russia is doing this. We know Russia is doing this. They're still denying that Russia is doing this. But suddenly, everybody's very interested in regulating ads, you know, because of Russia. No, all of you clowns on both sides have denied Russia when it was politically expedient for you. This isn't about Russia. This is about silencing the voices in our own country that don't agree with the two parties. Liberty Safe is just an amazing company that I would love. If you're looking for a safe, please do yourself a favor. Do your own homework. But take it from me, you're just not going to find a better value or a better safe than a Liberty Safe. You can find them at your local safe stores. You can find Liberty Safe, I think, at Cabela's. All of the Cabela's safes are Liberty Safe. They may say Cabela on it, but they're made by Liberty. And they're great, great safes. I have the Lincoln, which is, a pretty big one. And I will tell you that the number one complaint on Liberty Safe is I should have bought a bigger one. And it's true. My first safe that I bought was this little teeny safe, and I just wanted it for some documents. And then I started putting, well, I want that picture in there. I mean, this photo album should go in here, and well, there's this and that. And before you know it, it's just stuffed. When you really think about what's valuable and what you don't want to lose, there's even a lot of stuff from the kid's childhood that you have sitting in the bottom of a Liberty Safe. Also your guns. They make great gun safes. Liberty Safe right now, they have a special going on, 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. $20 a month. Liberty Safe, peace of mind, lifetime warranty, in-home delivery service, unmatched in the industry. Right now, 12 months interest-free payments as low as $20 a month on approved credit. Every home needs a Liberty Safe. Liberty Safe, the home of the best-built safes on the planet. Go there now, libertysafe.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So if I can just geek out for just 2 minutes, just allow me to geek out. You know who Neil deGrasse Tyson is?
The entire audience just said, ugh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. In unison.
Yeah, he's the, is he a cosmologist?
He's a cosmetologist. He does makeup.
I think
for,
so. Yeah.
He's a scientist. He's like one of the big global warming guys.
He's trying to fill the shoes of Carl Sagan, which is an insult to Carl Sagan. And he's just so pretentious and arrogant. And I follow Ray Kurzweil, and I think Ray Kurzweil is an absolute genius.
He's this futurist, if you don't know who he is. Really smart guy. He's been predicting kind of like the technology of the future pretty accurately for a long time.
For a long time. He's brilliant. He's the guy who invented, you know, text-to-speech and the electric synthesizer piano. And, I mean, it's like he's an amazing guy. And he's now the head of Singularity University, which is looking for artificial intelligence and being able to have humans live forever, trying to recreate the human mind. That's what he does. So he's in this interview with Neil, and Neil is just talking down to him and, you know, saying, you know, you're like a cult leader. You know, the singularity is near. That's like the end is near. And Ray looks at him and said, well, that's kind of what that's a play on. Yes. And he's like, so what are you saying now? He doesn't know. He's never read. Obviously, he's never read a single word that Ray has had. Mm. It's insulting. And it just piss me off, because you get so few chances to listen to Ray Kurzweil actually have a deep, meaningful conversation. And when you see this guy come in and you're like, okay, well, that'll be, I mean, you know, he'll have some smart questions. What a moron. What a moron.
It's very satisfying for you to call him a moron.
Is it?
Yeah. You know, he is. He's just like one of those. He's popular in this like Twitter world of science, where you can come out with like the catchy one-liner to shut down your opponents.
Oh, he drives me nuts.
It's irritating.
Yeah. Let me go to the audio. Rand Paul, GOP. We have 40 seconds. Can we do this in time?
I don't know if we have time for
it. We don't have time.
We have Rand coming up.
Okay, we have Rand coming up in just a second, and maybe we'll start with this. But he's been all over the GOP for not cutting spending. He is the guy who was instrumental in the latest on Obamacare. He's the guy who got it done, and we'll talk to him. Haven't had him on the show for a while, so anxious to hear what he has to say. Coming up next, Rand Paul.
Glenn Beck.
Cheesy chicken and black bean enchiladas with salsa verde. How about maple gravy smothered pork chops? Oh my gosh. Shrimp marinara with spaghetti, spinach and parsley, if you happen to be, if you like shrimp, like the seafood. This is the thing about Blue Apron, and that's what I'm talking about right now, Blue Apron. It is, you can customize it really easily. So like if you might not like shrimp, you can pull that meal out for the week and get a different one. Blue Apron sends you all of the ingredients you need to make these meals. Every single thing you need in the exact amount that you need it. So you don't have to worry about measuring and going crazy with all that stuff. They make it super easy to create these gourmet meals at home and that your family's going to absolutely love. You want that time around the dinner table with your family again? This is a great way to get it, and the food is incredible. Check out this week's menu. Get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/stew. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. It's blueapron.com/stew.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, Hillary Clinton might want to stop talking about so much Russian collusion, and here's why. In 2010, the Obama administration and the U.S. Committee on Foreign Investment approved a deal that allowed Russian Atomic Energy Agency called Rosatom to buy a majority stake in Uranium One. What's Uranium One? Uranium One was a Canadian company with significant uranium mining rights in the U.S. Now, the committee on foreign investment reviews all the deals that could result in foreign control of American business that has anything to do with national security. This deal gave Moscow control of 20% of the U.S. uranium supply. Uranium is kind of important. I can't remember, Stu, what does uranium help make? I can't remember. It's toasters or something.
Alfredo sauce.
That's what it is. In 2013, Rosatom bought the rest of Uranium One, meaning Vladimir Putin now controls one of the largest uranium-producing operations in the entire world. Now, most of these facts were known before. We talked about it when it happened. The press didn't seem to care about it. Some did report, but for some reason, this story never gained any traction. Maybe it's because everybody thought, oh, Vladimir Putin, he's our friend. The new bombshell twist to the story was reported by The Hill this week that starting in 2009, the FBI investigated Russia's efforts to infiltrate the U.S. nuclear materials industry. And with the help of a secret U.S. informant working with the Russians, the FBI compiled evidence of bribery, kickbacks, extortion, money laundering, and such in the U.S. by Rosatom officials. FBI also had evidence that Rosatom and Uranium One officials donated millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation. Let me say that one again. I want to make sure that I have this. The FBI also has evidence that Rosatom and Uranium One officials donated millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation, even while Clinton was Secretary of State and while she was on the Committee of Foreign Investment, which approved the purchase of Uranium One. Hillary did not disclose those donors to the Obama administration, even when she'd agreed to do so. What a shock there. So why would the Obama administration sign off on those deals when the FBI had several years of corruption evidence against Rosatom? Why would Congress never, why were they never briefed about this FBI poll and its findings? And why would Congress never look into the link between Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and the sale of Uranium One, even after the New York Times reported it in 2015? Hillary, what happened? I think you need a follow-up book just to address this shady chapter of your political career, because the American people deserve answers.
Thursday, October 19th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Here is Rand Paul on Tuesday talking about the GOP.
I think the biggest holdup is not people like me. I want a big, big, very bold tax cut. I'm for the bigger the better. And I will settle for less than I want, but I do want the biggest, and I will agitate to make sure that everybody across the board gets a tax cut. I think the problem really is on the other side. There are three or four people who don't want this to be a tax cut at all. They want it to be exactly revenue neutral, meaning that we will cut taxes on half the people,
yep,
and we will raise taxes on the other half to make it neutral. I've always been a believer that you make it deficit neutral by not raising other people's taxes, but by cutting spending. So I have many entitlement reform bills that are out there. I can't get a Republican to sign on because they give lip service to smaller government, but they're afraid of their shadow, and not a damn one of them really are really for cutting spending.
Rand Paul joins us now. Hello, Rand. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Glenn. Yeah, they've got me kind of worked up over this. I'm kind of annoyed that Republicans forgot what it meant to be conservative. And they put things through that they have no intention of doing. And so, yeah, I'm riled up. I mean, it used to be there were some conservatives who believed that we should try to restrain spending. We capped it. We put these self-imposed restraints, and we exceed them all the time. So we got Lindsey Graham and John McCain have now spent nearly $2 trillion off budget, and they're insisting on more. They will not put it on budget. It exceeds the spending caps. It's a game. It's a charade. And Lindsey Graham and John McCain are bankrupting our country. We had a $20 trillion debt. It's the biggest threat to our national security. And thank John McCain and Lindsey Graham for doing it.
So help me out on this. There's no one in the Senate or the House. Is there a group of you guys that are standing together?
I think there has been in the past. And I think what they've been sold is a bill of goods by leadership that, oh, it doesn't matter anymore what's in the budget. It's toilet paper. It's basically the budget is just a vehicle for doing Obamacare repeal. Well, then they didn't repeal Obamacare because we lost like six or seven Republicans who said they were for repeal, and then they changed their mind. So now they say, oh, the budget doesn't matter. Well, the budget is what we stand for.
Yeah.
It's like our platform. It's like saying, oh, we don't care what's in our platform. Why don't we put that we're for single payer in our platform because it doesn't matter what's in our platform. No, it matters. It's what the Republican Party stands stands for. And what I'm so upset about is that the Republican Party, we're turning out to be a bunch of hypocrites who say we care about the debt, and yet the debt gets bigger and bigger under us.
Yeah, it's not only, I mean, you've already pointed this out, it's not only just the debt, it's all of it. It's small government, it's constitutional principles, it's, you know, freedom of the press, it's everything. So what is the future of the Republican Party?
Well, I'm going to give them a chance to vote on a couple of things, but I can tell you I'm getting pressure and my arm twisted not to introduce any amendments to the budget. But I'm going to introduce my first amendment will be this. There's $43 billion in it that is above the spending caps that's put in an account that is immune to any kind of surveillance. The account that spent $2 trillion, the overseas contingency account.
Wait, what is that? What does that mean? What is that? Where does that money go? What is that money?
Starting 15 years ago, we started saying, you know what, we're at war, but we're not going to account for the money. We're not going to appropriate it as we should through the defense budget. We're just going to put it into an account that exceeds all the caps, and then we're going to pretend like we're fiscally conservative. And the liberals said, well, you can do that, but then you got to give us more emergency money for welfare. So we got the welfare and the warfare crowd come together. This is, look, George Bush, the debt went from $5 trillion to $10 trillion under George W. Bush. Under Obama, it went from $10 to $20 trillion. And now we're going to do it again because Republicans are not serious and honest about really wanting to cut spending. So in the budget, in the first year of this budget, and this is a good thing, there's a $96 billion entitlement cut. And I asked them, okay, who has the bill that does that? Which committee is studying entitlement reform? There is no bill. There is no one studying it. And there is absolutely no intention of doing it. So I'm going to introduce an amendment.
So wait. You're moving too fast. Wait. So they said that they were going to cut, but then they took no action after they passed that.
Well, it hadn't passed yet. This is going to be voted on today. But my point is, why don't we have budget reconciliation instructions? These are the instructions that through simple majority, we could do entitlement reform. There's nothing stopping us, just our will. So I'm going to give them a chance today. I'm going to put an amendment forward today that says through a simple majority, through the budget process, we can do entitlement reform. And you know what's going to be fun to watch? To watch them squirm, because I guarantee all of leadership will vote no, and most of the Republicans will vote against doing entitlement reform. I'm also going to give them the chance to vote on Obamacare again. I guarantee most of them will vote against considering instructions to do Obamacare repeal. And then I'm going to try to cut the money that they've put in that's above the spending caps. And I will lose probably overwhelmingly because Republicans are not serious. And basically, they are hypocrites. They say they want to cut spending. They go home and they say they have a problem with the debt. And the debt gets worse under Republicans because they're not serious.
So this to me sounds like a gauntlet being thrown down at the feet. What is the if not then?
I think what happens is they're going to get their budget through because I'm the sole and only voice who says we should stay within the spending caps. So I don't have anybody else to join me, but I'm going to raise hell doing it anyway.
You can't get Mike Lee to even help you on this?
You have to ask him on that.
Okay, I will.
I have, you know, the thing is that I'm going to stay where I am because the thing is look, they tell me the budget means nothing. They tell me it's a piece of toilet paper and it doesn't mean anything. It's just a vehicle for tax reform. And I say, well, if it doesn't mean anything, why don't you let me put into it a conservative vision that we shouldn't spend too much money? Why don't we put that in the budget? And they say, oh, no, we can't change it because John McCain and Lindsey Graham want unlimited military spending. And I say, well, that's bankrupting us as well because then the liberals come back and want unlimited welfare spending. And so they say, oh, we can't give in. There's more of those who want unlimited spending than there are conservatives. If I had one or two other persons, two other senators to stand with me, we could dictate what's in the budget.
Okay, so who's most likely to help you and we can have the audience call them?
Right now, there really isn't anyone. And so that's the problem. And that's the sad fact is that nobody cares about the budget. Nobody cares about the debt. And we're just going to do this to get to a tax cut. And look, I'm all in on the tax cut. The bigger, the better. I told the president this weekend, I will vote for the biggest tax cut that comes down. I will also vote for the small one. But I am all in on the tax cuts. but I just can't just give up being a conservative and say, oh, I'm not for spending cuts.
Yeah.
That's my whole principle, is the way we would balance a tax cut is with spending cuts.
Yeah.
We're not going to do the spending cuts, then we're just dishonest.
Yeah, in fact, you know, the Roaring Twenties was caused by the spending cuts first and the tax cuts second. It's the way it should be done. Let me go to healthcare. It was amazing to see you standing behind the president as he signed, I hate to describe it as an executive order because it was just a clarification of the law that allowed people to buy insurance in ways they've never been allowed to buy before. And the reason why it was amazing is because you and people like you were the biggest enemy of Donald Trump, according to his side. You know, it was the Freedom Caucus and the small government constitutionalists that were causing all the problems. And in the end, you were the only one that could get anything done.
This is going to be bigger than many people imagine. There's up to 50 million people in our country who could possibly get insurance through health associations. Some of these are pretty big. National Restaurant Association has a couple of million restaurants, 15 million employees. Can you imagine if you worked at McDonald's and right now you have no insurance, but then they said, oh, you can join to be part of a 15 million person group insurance plan, and you're going to be able to get the leverage of having 15 million people tell big insurance that they're going to have to come down on their prices. This would be an amazing thing. There's 28 million people right now under Obamacare who don't have insurance. I think this allowing individuals to join groups could potentially help a lot of that 28 million. There's 11 million people in the Obamacare individual market. Many of them have had 100% increase in their premiums. This has a good chance of letting them get insurance that isn't so expensive.
Now, how long does it take for these, you know, these like the Restaurant Association to be able to go and do it? Are they motivated to do it?
Well, I think they are. A lot of the associations are excited. The realtors, the retailers, the franchisees, a lot of them are excited by it. Unfortunately, government is so damn slow. So the regulations probably won't come out for a couple of months. When they do, it'll be too late for 2018 because people buy their insurance in 2017 for 2018. So really, we're looking, unfortunately, at 2019. But we have to do this kind of stuff. We have to allow more people to have freedom. And on whether or not it's executive order, I think it's important to know that an executive order that undoes an executive order that was overreach is a good thing. So I think you have a natural right, a natural liberty to associate. And the Supreme Court has upheld this several times. You have right to peaceable assembly, but you also have the right to associate for economic means. And the Supreme Court has upheld that too. So if you and I want to get together in an association to get purchasing power, I think there's actually a First Amendment protection of that. Either way, what President Trump has done is looked at the original health care law from the 70s, read it closely, and said, guess what? The regulators of Clinton, Bush, and Obama got it wrong. We're reading the bill, the original bill, and this is the interpretation we think is most consistent with the bill. I think as long as that's allowing freedom and not creating a new government program, but allowing you the freedom to buy something, I think that is an appropriate use.
So let's quickly, I've only got about a minute and a half left. Let me play this audio and get your reaction. This is testimony from Jeff Sessions yesterday.
And I'll ask the same question. Will you commit to not putting reporters in jail for doing their jobs?
Well, I don't know that I can make a blanket commitment to that effect. But I would say this, we've not taken any aggressive action against the media at this point.
So it's a pretty easy answer for me. How would you have answered that, Rand?
My answer to his answer is, oh, my God.
Right,
I can't believe that was his answer. No, nobody's going to jail. Nobody in the press should go to the jail. In fact, the thing about the First Amendment is it protects all speech, even offensive speech, and probably most particularly offensive speech, because good speech nobody complains about. If I tell you I love Glenn Beck, you're not going to want to censor that. If I say something mean, that's what people want to censor. But you have to have dissent and criticism in a free society. My goodness, if you can't defend the First Amendment, where are we?
It is terrifying, the road that we're on. And Rand, I appreciate all your hard work and the hard stances that you take, and I'm sure you get a lot of trouble on Capitol Hill and maybe some trouble back home, but we're a fan. Thank you so much for your hard work.
Thanks, Glenn.
You bet. Bye-bye. Rand Paul. See if we can get a hold of Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, Ben Sasse. See if we can get any of them to go on the record of what why they won't stand with him on this. I can't believe there's nobody in the Senate, but, you know. All right, anyone paying attention knows now is the time to prepare. Saying the world is unpredictable is putting it mildly. None of us have a guarantee of what tomorrow brings. The best anyone can do is to become prepared, and it's not too late to start a plan. Ensure that feeding your family never becomes something that you have to be dependent on the government for. Having food storage for emergency situations means you're never going to have to deal with not being able to eat during a crisis. And that's where My Patriot Supply comes in. They are the solution. I've depended on them for years. My Patriot Supply right now has 102 servings of survival food. That's less than a dollar per serving. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, really good food, less than a dollar per serving. If you are looking to prepare, or quite honestly, you are just struggling and you are worried about jobs and everything else, this is a really good, nutritious meal, 102 servings of breakfast, lunch, and dinner for less than a dollar per serving. My Patriot Supply. Trust the seasoned experts at My Patriot Supply. 1-800-271-63 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So a fund advisor, Tom Lee, says if you use Metcalfe's Law is a theory that explains basically how networks of people work. Like, one fax machine is worthless because nobody has a fax to receive. But once all your friends have fax machines, it becomes very, very valuable. And so you look at things like, you know, he could predict that Facebook was going to, you know, do a certain thing because it had to hit. If once it starts to hit this number of users, then it's going to explode and exponentially growth. He's using Metcalfe's Law now to look at Bitcoin. And he says he believes that Bitcoin will reach $25,000 per coin in 5 years.
That's about almost five times what it is right now.
So that means that what's his name? The Julian Assange. It could become one of the more wealthy people on the planet, because the government forced them out of using regular currency. So they took all of their investment money and put it in cryptocurrency. And they've already made 50,000% on their money.
Yeah, Assange likes to bring that up because that was what happened. When they tried to stop WikiLeaks, they blocked all the credit card transactions for donations. So he was forced to take only Bitcoin when Bitcoin was worth very little, you know, a couple $100. I mean, really, before that, it was back in the days when it was double digits, $10, $12. Now it's worth $5,731. So he's made a bit of a profit there. I don't think that's what the government intended at the time, but it's worked well.
So they believe that soon as the next generation start to store any kind of wealth, they're going to store it in Bitcoin. But he says that he's looking now at $25,000, and he thinks that if things would really catch fire, you know, in the monetary system, that it could go up to $75,000 a Bitcoin.
That would be a lot.
Now's the time to buy a Bitcoin.
I'm not showing up for work the day after that happens, just so you know.
Really?
Or any day after it.
Wow.
So you're aware.
All right. Thank you.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I got an email yesterday from somebody, and they said, Glenn, you have got to talk about this Donald Trump thing with the widow. And I said, what angle? and you know, this is outrageous. This is outrageous. And I read what he supposedly said to the widow. Now, there's a lot of stuff leading up to this that is just, I mean, I don't know how to explain him. But what he said apparently to the widow was, your husband knew what he signed up for. Now, is that, you know, could that have been phrased better? Yes. Is that something that I would have said? No. But I could see myself saying something, you know, he died in the line of duty and he was a very brave man.
You know,
and we thank you for his service. And I mean, he died for a cause and that's why he was there. And I wish it would have turned out differently.
Yeah. But you know who I've heard that exact phrasing from? He knew what he was doing. You know, I've heard that from a million times. People who are in the military that have come in here.
All the time.
They tell us that every single time. I knew what I was doing. Yep. You know, people have lost their legs. People have had their arms blown off. They're like, that's why I was there. I mean, I knew that was the risk and I was right there. There's nothing wrong with a sentiment.
No.
Whether you do it at that moment or whether that's an important thing for the president to a widow is
I think where this fell apart is, first of all, Mr. President, pick up the phone. Not a speaker phone. Pick up the phone. So it's personal, but he was on a speakerphone, and so it didn't feel personal to her, and he said this. Now, does anybody really have a problem with the president saying that? I mean, I don't think this is something that any of us really truly have a problem with at all, other than we feel for her and think, yeah, it was poorly phrased. And gosh, you know, she wouldn't have said something like that because it is poorly phrased. But beyond that, nothing. Nothing. This is becoming the biggest scandal now of all time.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it's living up to those sorts of standards, right? It shouldn't be. I you know,
but the reason why it is because instead of saying, you know, the conversation between his wife and I is confidential, and I'm not going to characterize it or anything. It was a moment between us. Even if she came out and she said, he said he was going to come over and light me on fire. The president, if asked, did she say she was going to light you on fire? What would happen in that conversation? You know what? She is a grieving wife. I am not going to add to any of this. That's what you say. Instead, some crazy congressman comes out and says, he said this. Well, according to her now, he did say that. To me, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. He comes out and says, I never said that. And I dare you to say that again. I have proof. What proof, Mr. President? You have proof? Produce the proof. The bluster is just making things worse, always, over and over and over again. Then, did you hear what he said about General Kelly's son?
And the reporting today on this, because General Kelly's son died in 2010, he apparently did not get a call from Barack Obama. Something conveniently overlooked by the media. Because, and I will say in Trump's defense, you know, he didn't say no president has ever made a call. He just said, I don't know what the policies were. Like, you know, a lot of people, some people wrote letters, some people called. And the media translated that as if he was making this definitive statement that Barack Obama had never made a phone call in his life. But Kelly did.
Bo Bergdahl, we know he called.
Right. I mean, there have been calls. But the media, I think, mishandled that, first of all. But Trump's defense was saying, well, ask General Kelly if Obama called him. I don't know what Obama's policy was. Apparently, he knew that Kelly didn't get a call, but Kelly didn't necessarily want that fact to be part of this debate.
His son's death is completely off limits, and he doesn't talk about his son's death, and he didn't want it publicized. And this is the biggest problem with the president. His mouth. He doesn't know when to shut it. and he just says things off. And I believe me, I have the same disease. Just saying what is on the top of your head, and you know, not all thoughts are equal. And for him to say that about General Kelly now is throwing tension between him and General Kelly, because General Kelly was like, please don't throw my son into this. I don't want my son being politicized between two presidents.
And we don't know for sure if he didn't want that. He apparently is a guy that does not talk about this very often. And, you know, if you watch the General Kelly press conference that happened last week, you know, for people who might be in the audience that are nervous at times about what Trump is doing, even though you like some of the policies, you might not like the way he handles things. It was a real calming feel. I mean, just to watch.
He's great.
You realize that the people surrounding Trump, even, you know, Trump is tweeting about stuff and he's doing all these things all the time. And it's like, well, he's a media personality. He's always been a media personality, and that's why he deals with things. But I mean, General Kelly's a pretty serious guy. You know, Bob Corker can say all he wants that, you know, Trump is risking World War III. Who knows more about it, General Kelly or Bob Corker? I'm fully confident in Kelly and Mattis having their, as long as their hands are there and they're being respected, I feel, you know, it is a calming influence on, you know, on a guy who I don't think necessarily is a level hand on this.
A calming factor.
Sure.
Yes. I'm being not necessarily careful. A calming factor. And here's evidence. Listen to Trump doubling down on the remarks.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all. She knows it. And she now is not saying it. I did not say what she said. And I'd like her to make the statement again, because I did not say what she said. I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is sounded like a lovely woman. Did not say what the congresswoman said. And most people aren't too surprised to hear that.
What is the proof, Mr. President?
Let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
She's saying that you said this.
Okay, let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
Why would you do that? And unfortunately for him, it is good to have a good memory, which I don't have, and he apparently doesn't have either. That woman sounds an awful lot like, you know, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I mean, just
luckily for him, though,
say the name.
He doesn't remember the congresswoman's name either.
Yeah,
so
I know.
He's like a blanket. I have no idea who I'm talking about right now.
My wife and I needed to update our bedroom badly. We bought a house a few years ago, and we just left the curtains in that, you know, came with the house, and they were really, they were bad. But, you know, your bedroom is usually the last place that gets anything. So it was a Saturday morning, and we decided to email blinds.com. We got online first, and we started looking at things, and I'm like, I don't know any. And so we emailed and wanted to get some, you know, one of their designers online because they offer you free help. And so we asked for a designer, and I expected them to call back, you know, next week, or, you know, you'll have an appointment in 2 weeks. They immediately wrote back and said, we're ready right now if you want to. So we FaceTimed and took them into the bedroom and said, here's what we're trying to change. This is what we're kind of feeling like. They sent us pictures back with different options. We picked the option. They cut the drapes, sent them to us. We hung them. They're great. This is the way a great business works. If you mismeasure or pick the wrong color, they'll remake your blinds or your curtains or shades, drapes, whatever, for free. They'll even send you the free samples to make sure everything looks just as good in person as it does online. Every order gets free shipping. The prices are the best, and now they're even better. Now through October 24th, huge site-wide savings at Blinds.com. And when you use the promo code BECK, you're going to get an additional 5% off. So you have the site-wide savings plus an additional 5% when you use the promo code BECK, but only until October 24th. Blinds.com, promo code BECK. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So this week, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, the star, John Boyega, who is John, who does he play?
It's Finn, right? The African-American former stormtrooper, right?
Okay.
I think.
He said he was teasing that there is a gay storyline between his character and Poe. Now, Poe is the guy he breaks out of jail?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
In the original, the one that came out a couple of years ago.
Okay, so in this interview, he said that filmmakers have the responsibility to bring more LGBTQ inclusion, both behind and in front of the camera. Don't you think that, I mean, gay storylines are everywhere.
Seem
now.
To be common.
I mean, it's not like it's hidden. And is it a bigger percentage of the population than we? I mean, and, you know, gay people in Hollywood, there's a large, probably a larger gay population in Hollywood just, you know, because of the art thing than there probably is, you know, at the Cattle Ranchers Association. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of gay people in Hollywood now. He's saying that just because you hire the same sort of people, you're getting the same sort of film. It's not wrong, but there's a lack of variety. You want a higher quota? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, it seems like there's a good variety. I feel like the variety of the natural flow of different relationships has been covered fairly regularly.
I think that he said, I think that Oscar is always looking at me with love in his eyes. And I guess that's what the fans saw. And they realized he either needs to chill or come out.
There was a rumor that was going around about this, that if you kind of take some freeze frames out, you kind of go through the storyline. For example, one of the storylines of that movie was that Finn basically borrows the coat of the other guy and wears it around the whole movie. Almost like a varsity letter jacket.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like,
I've been pinned.
Right. And then, you know, they are looking into each other's eyes and holding each other closely several times. Of course, they're celebrating living through an almost disaster. So that could be part of the reason.
I don't know if we will live through a disaster. I don't know if I would look at you and say, hold me, Stu.
You know, that hurts. I got to be honest about it. That
really?
Hurts. That hurts a lot. I mean,
I'm a huggy guy. I would hug it out. I'd be like, huh, that earthquake. That was pretty, that was crazy, right?
But not, there's no caring. There's nothing deeper.
No, there is, but wow. I don't know if my instincts just say, I want to hold you for a while.
Well, I don't know that it's not like they spooned in the movie.
They were wearing each other's jackets. It was like, you know, I don't want to hold you, but let me wear your jacket. You wear mine.
The jacket really didn't seem to make any sense in the movie either.
Well, of course, because you didn't see what was happening off screen. He stayed at the other guy's house. He was wearing the same clothes, but they didn't want to look like they were wearing the same clothes, so they switched clothes.
It's possible, right? It's possible.
How obvious would that be if two people were like trying to be subtle, they came in the other person's clothes that they were wearing the day before? Guys, that's not subtle. You swapped clothes. It's worse.
It is sort of worse. I don't know. Can you see a Star Wars character having like a walk of shame back after like a late night sort of get together? Does that happen? Can you have a walk of shame on the Millennium Falcon?
I mean, none of them have been on screen, but I think the Millennial Falcon probably is most at home with a walk of shame.
Han Solo, certainly. Yeah. We all know Han was hooking up with everybody.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, let's not forget Luke and Princess Leia were making out, and their brother and sister. That's a real walk of shame.
It was sick.
What does that look like after?
Kill her. Kill her.
Because the moment he finds out about Luke, about, you know, his father, I don't think there's a spoiler alert on that one anymore. But
I see dead people.
The moment he finds out that he's his father, you know, Darth is his father, Luke has the understandable reaction of trying to take in that his father's like the most evil man in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But like 6 hours later, it's all about him kissing his sister.
At 6 hours later, he's realizing.
I think as soon as I know that that's my father and I do the math, I'm like, holy cow, that's my dad, which means she's my. I just at least wipe my lips. I at least naturally just kind of go, okay, you're my dad? I mean, there is an initial reaction of I was making it with my sister.
You think you put it together right then?
I think it comes within the first 5 minutes.
I will say there's a definite trip to a CVS. You're hanging out in the Oral-B section with various mouthwashes.
Yeah,
like you're at some point.
Hey, I was just making out with my sister. Do you have anything I can clean my mouth out with? I'm just.
I mean, capitalism works well. I don't know if there's a product for that yet.
Soon, they're probably. Why isn't there, Stu? Why isn't there representation of people who make out with their sister? Love is love.
Love
who
is
are
love.
You to say?
It's coming.
Oh, it is.
On the internet, I think you could probably find it. It was Sister Wash. I don't know what it's called, but there's
sister
something.
Sister Wash just sounds bad.
It does. Well, it is bad. The guy was making out with his sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was
to me, that was the ickier part of Star Wars.
The incest. You're thinking the incest was the bad guy.
Yeah. And it's not really talked about a lot.
No, there's a lot of planets blowing up, but I feel like the incest was really notable.
It's kind of like somebody should have been, you know, on the ship going, I just like to point out that these two were making out and none of you have said anything about it.
You need that guy.
Yeah, you do. Role.
Maybe that's what that new hamster thing is going to do. The Porg or whatever. He's going to be like, by the way, did you see that like 100 years ago, Luke was making out with Leia? Did you guys see
that? I just want to point out the incest part of the storyline.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Mike and his roommate knew they only had seconds to make a last-ditch escape from their home in Yuba County, California. The flying embers and the smoke swarmed everywhere. As the fire singed their hair and burned their eyes, they ran into the SUV, praying to God that they would make it out in time.
Oh my God, dude. You're going to have to cut to the left. That's
Open
all
the gate. Open the gate.
Here he is running out into.
We gotta die, dude. We gotta get out of here.
Into the flames. Trying to open the gate so they can get their SUV through. Flames all around them, embers in their hair.
Sweat blow by. Sweat blow by. I'm gonna breathe, dude. We'll be alright. We got this.
We shouldn't be driving into this gorge.
Oh my God.
Get to this meadow, dude.
I can't breathe. Come on, expedition, baby. You can do it, girl.
We're not dead yet.
This is the only option, dude. We couldn't.
Mike and his roommate survived, but others have not been so lucky. The Northern California wildfires have claimed at least 42 people so far, but that is expected to go way up as we begin to search and send search and rescue teams out to comb through the gutted homes looking for bodies. 5,700 homes and businesses have been reduced to ashes. To put this into perspective, the wildfires have consumed an area larger than New York City. This has been the deadliest wildfire epidemic in Californian history. And yet, out of the smoke and the debris comes hope. Lauren Jane Jade Smith. Lauren lost the most precious thing in the world to the Santa Rosa wildfires. He lost his Oakland A's collection. He had baseball cards dating back to the year 2000. He had 17 jerseys, 10 hats, 2 baseballs, one of them signed by the entire team. Lauren wrote to the baseball team about his plight. He said, to the Oakland A's, I love watching your A's games. I want to be an A's player. I want to play at Mark West Little League in Santa Rosa. I played baseball in my backyard all day, loving the A's and making my own game. In my backyard, we won 6 World Series in a row. But my house burned down in the Santa Rosa fire, and my saddest thing was that my A's collection is gone. Well, the A's got that note. And the president of the A's, moved so much by Lauren's letter, he promised to completely outfit the 9-year-old and his family in new athletics gear. People from all over the country are now sending Lauren their Oakland A's memorabilia in an effort to help him restore his collection. It is the simple things in life that change our experience. Never underestimate the generosity of humanity in small and seemingly insignificant ways. Ask and you shall receive. As the wildfires in Northern California become contained, remember that the fire in a man's heart to do good can never be extinguished.
Thursday, October 19th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Except when it comes to Capitol Hill. I don't know if you've heard about this spat. Ben Sasse had to apologize to Ted Cruz yesterday for spilling Dr. Pepper on him. Here he is.
There was some drama there. Sorry to have added to the drama and distracted you for a minute. I was paying enough attention there that I dumped a Dr. Pepper on Senator Cruz. So that's what was distracting us on this side of the dais.
That's not really an apology, is it, Stu?
No, it's an excuse.
Not that you're here to, you know, rake any embers on this fire and try to get it to burn a little brighter.
No, not at all. I'm not trying to antagonize it, though I would obviously, I mean, you know, Cruz doesn't need me to tell him this. He's got a legal background, but I would absolutely sue.
Right.
First of all, I would sue Sasse for the assault. Secondly, I would file another lawsuit because when a Dr. Pepper goes down, that's a human tragedy. Not just, it's for all of us. I think class action is in the works.
Well, so Sasse responded and asked about the spilled soda on Cruz. Was it an accident? He replied, no comment. That's when Cruz responded on Twitter, instructing his staff not to allow Ben Sasse to come into his office and touch his supply of Dr. Peppers. Sasse responded with a comment about Rafael Cruz being part of the conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy.
It escalates kind of quickly there from the soda to the murder of a president.
Yes, sure. It does. Mm-hmm. Cruz, however, replied by sending a very cryptic message that some may recognize as the language of the Zodiac Killer.
Which, obviously, if you don't know, Ted Cruz was the Zodiac Killer. In case you weren't up on that.
To which Ben Sasse responded, aha, I found Raphael in this code. I'm still looking for Grassy Knoll.
It's nice to see that a couple of people in Washington seem to actually like each other.
And I really like Ben Sasse.
Yeah, I like them both. They're both,
I like Ted Cruz too, obviously. But, yeah. I mean, Ben Sasse has really played this really well all the way along, has he not? He is funny, he is genuine, and he seems to be doing all the... You could never convince me he's not trying to run for president of the United States. You'll never convince me. He could come up and say, Glenn, I've signed a document in blood that says I'll never run for president. Yeah, right. I mean, because he's just playing it so smart. He's just appearing in all the right places. And
he's a very smart guy, obviously. I mean, I think he has been critical of Trump and some people who like Trump, you know, obviously don't like that. However, most of the time it's been on stuff that, it's pretty clearly, you know, he was on about the First Amendment statement that Trump made the other day that even his own FCC head is saying is not reality.
Oh, he did come out and say that?
Ajit Pai, yeah. He said,
Waited for his response. I didn't see it.
Yeah, he said basically, yeah, no, we don't pull licenses because of content reasons like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, and everybody knows that. But I mean, you know, Sasse has hit him, I think, on the right things. And he's been supportive of Trump on some of the stuff as well. He's generally likable. He's funny, which is, you know, he has a good
understanding of how to use social media, which is fairly rare in Washington. Ask Mike Huckabee. a way to not use it. So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting... you're right. He has all the profiles of that. Of course, there's a Republican president. I mean, no matter what you think of Donald Trump, the odds of him losing a primary are incredibly low unless it gets a lot worse
I don't think it is. I shouldn't have said 2020. I mean, assuming that, you know, Donald Trump, wouldn't win, in a primary or, what you know, wouldn't run in 2020, then I think Ben Sasse would run. Donald Trump said, "I'm not going to win," nobody's going to take on Donald Trump and primary him.
I think somebody will probably attempt it, but I don't think it's going to be successful. And I don't think it's going to be someone like Sasse with real upside of actually eventually becoming president. No. It's going to be that John Kasich type of guy who's like, well, what else is he going to do? Really? You know, fold laundry.
I could have taken out the trash, but I decided why not run for president.
You could see, I think somebody will try as a Republican. My guess is from that Kasich sort of establishment wing rather than constitutionalist wing.
I will tell you, I saw a story here that where is it? On here it is. On millennial Mormons. This actually comes from, I think, the Huffington Post. Now listen to this, because you can't get more conservative than Mormons, right?
They
haven't voted for a Democrat for president since John F. Kennedy. All right, so it's a little conservative. For millennials in Utah, one of the most conservative states in the nation, it's been long undesirable to call yourself a Democrat. Now, 9 months into Donald Trump's presidency, it's increasingly a taboo to identify as a Republican. And what they're saying is in this article is that people are not they're just not identifying. Millennials are not identifying as either a Republican or a Democrat. They don't. The findings are not scientific, but many millennials said they are motivated by individual candidates and causes, not by political parties. Very few offered praise for the president. Most identified as a moderate, said they were more liberal than their parents. They distrusted both traditional news and social media, and said that they felt it caused nothing but polarization. One of the guys said, see if I can find it, that it was really only the people that were trying to cause conflict on campus that were the ones really talking about politics. Everybody else is talking about principles, and the political people, they felt, were really starting to become the ones who are just trying to cause conflict. Everybody else is like, look, I don't care about the parties. And I think that the Republican Party, Ted Cruz was right, and maybe Tom Cruise was right as well, but Ted was right when he said last week that, you know, the Republicans are over in 2020. They're over in 2020 if they don't enact something significant here now.
Yeah, and Trump said this the other day. He was like, well, you know what? I'm not going to blame myself. I'm not going to blame myself for this. This is the Congress is supposed to bring these things to me. And he is completely right on that.
Yep.
Whatever you want to say about Donald Trump.
It's not his job to push the legislation,
right? That's not
to initiate it. It's his job to be a bully pulpit for it.
Yeah, and but even that is like, I don't know. You're in Congress. You're an elected member of Congress. You need the president to tell you what to do? Go out and pass a freaking law. He'll sign whatever you want. He said it over and over again.
No, I know.
Pass something and he will sign it.
Yeah, I was talking technically his job was that. But he doesn't need to do that. They have both houses of Congress. They can't get their crap together. They are worthless.
Yeah.
They are worthless. And if they... I mean, I think the parties are done. You know, the Democrats are in probably even more trouble than the Republicans. I mean, look, they're still talking about maybe Joe Biden would run. Maybe Joe Biden? That's your big millennial push?
Oh, man, do I want that to happen?
Bernie Sanders, who is...
Who's older? I don't even know. They're both in their 70s, right? Trump would be in his 70s.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's kind of crazy. Did you see the comments from Nancy Pelosi, by the way? Because you mentioned the Mormon thing, which made me think of, here's a group of people that are typically well-mannered and conservative, as you point out. Nancy Pelosi now is saying, doesn't Mitt Romney look good to us now? Now, it's interesting that she would bring that up because first of all, longstanding tradition. Whatever the new, whoever the new guy is worse. If they bring the most mild-mannered person ever to run after Donald Trump, they will say, this guy's worse than Trump.
Mike Pence.
Yeah,
Mike
exactly.
Pence, they're already saying, yeah, when they were talking Trump. About mm-hmm. when they were talking about impeachment for Donald Trump, they were already saying, no, Pence is worse. Pence is worse? It just goes to prove exactly mm-hmm. what you just said. I mean, everyone is the devil.
Everyone's a devil, and the newest person's always the worst devil. They did it with George W. Bush. They were calling yeah. him Satan and a terrorist for all those years, and because he hated gay people so much. So then the leader of the pack that next election in 2008 was Rudy Giuliani for a while. Giuliani, a guy who's been outspoken on gay rights and it's socially moderate.
Oh, no, he's the devil.
Right. He was worse than George W. Bush. No matter who it is, it's always going to be worse than the last person.
Which is why people finally give up and say, you know what? I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Who's going to make you guys shut up? Because you guys don't like anybody. And that's something that we have to watch and guard against. We have to make sure we're not sending that message back. That there's nobody reasonable, because I can think of people that are reasonable.
You're speaking slowly here.
I'm having a stroke.
Oh, okay, that's better than you have absolutely no answer.
No answer to who would be
reasonable. Well, reasonable is a high bar here. We're talking Satan or not Satan, right, is okay. All we're looking for.
All right, okay, I can do that. Okay. I can do that. I think.
Not right now, but you, in theory, with some research,
at some point, maybe we get the researcher on it and we'll do a special. Mm-hmm. We'll reveal the name.
It's not scheduled yet.
No,
but if we could schedule it.
Don't plan on it.
Probably.
Nothing is more essential than protecting your home, but traditional home security can be a punishing and expensive task. There is a better way. You can protect yourself and your home and your family with SimpliSafe. Ask anybody who's been locked into a long-term security contract. I mean, I'm sure you have. You're on the hook for 3 years. You're paying $40-$50 a month. The installation alone, if you have it installed in your house, is a fortune. Not to mention that it's all hardwired. Have you ever replaced your security system because you've moved into a house and then they have to take out the old security system and put the new one in? This is ridiculous. SimpliSafe is a totally wireless security system. It has no long-term contracts. It protects your home 24/7 around the clock, no contracts, no hidden fees. The cost is $15 a month, three times less than the other guys. No hidden fees. Go to simplisafebeck.com, get a special 10% discount. Now, if you want it tonight in your home, up and running, you can go to your local Best Buy and get it. It's SimpliSafe, but if you'd like to save that extra 10%, go to simplisafebeck.com. Do it now, simplisafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Great story. In the Wall Street Journal, Conan O'Brien and his family were out to dinner in Santa Monica last year when his daughter began to screech, "Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh." Conan said, "I thought a Cessna had just plowed into the sidewalks and burst into flames. Then my son started to freak out. They're crossing the street. They're crossing the street." The source of the pandemonium was the arrival of what Mr. O'Brien's children deemed bigger celebrities. Mild-mannered Mormons. The late-night TV host who took a picture with them recognized them as the stars of Studio C. Have you ever seen Studio C?
Yeah, I've seen some of it, yeah.
It is really, really, really funny.
Really well done.
Studio C has achieved sizable popularity on the internet despite, or perhaps because of, its super scrubbed brand of clean humor, such as a skit about a soccer goalie named Scott Sterling. Have you seen this?
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, my gosh. Just Google right now, Scott Sterling soccer. I'll post this up at glenbeck.com. It is hysterical. who continually blocks shots with his face. It's a scream. You'll watch it over and over and over again. The performers are employees of the Utah BYU school and have to adhere to its honor code. They have banned innuendo, cursing, politics, even the word gosh, because it sounds too much like God. The result is a pop culture phenomenon. It has racked up more than 1 billion views on YouTube, jeez, a third the size of Saturday Night Live.
Wow, that's amazing. This soccer video you're talking about, 55.7 million views.
It's hysterical.
It's a nice number.
Still, some have found reasons to be offended. One viewer wrote to complain about a joke at the expense of a character with a hernia, saying hernias are painful. Others objected to a bit where people shot at a cat. Another chastised a cast member for using the word butt, suggesting that it would be better to use the word derriere.
There's a little bit more class to it, we'll say
yeah,
that.
Sure, okay. Even without swearings or references to sex, they can tap into comedy's subversive roots. Conan, a former writer for Saturday Night Live, who now hosts his own show on TBS, says the cleanliness of Studio C's humor was almost an afterthought to him. What got his attention was the craftsmanship of the skits, particularly their solid endings, something that he has always found challenging.
I've never noticed a sketch comedy show having trouble with endings, though. That seems... No, wow, that's out there.
No.
That one's out there. I've never noticed that on all sketch comedy shows ever produced.
If you've never watched Studio C, my kids watch it religiously. I mean, they have... My son is probably maybe 47 million views of those 55.
Yeah.
They love Studio C, and they'll just watch it on YouTube clip after clip after clip because they're just hysterical. There's also another one. Well, I'll post these today. There's another one that's really funny about a doctor that has found a way to take the birth pain from the mother and transfer it to the father. And she's having the baby, he's having the pain, and it's really funny.
That sounds like
it's
a terrible, really terrible idea.
No, I hope not science pursue. Is
science,
never,
stay away.
Please don't pursue that.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Glad you're here. Let's say hello to our good friend, Pat Gray.
Hello.
Pat Gray Unleashed. Hey, by the way you said that, have you seen The Good Doctor yet on, I think it's on ABC? Have you seen that?
I have. I love that show. There's only 2 episodes out that I've seen, but...
Really? I've only seen the first episode, so I don't
know.
Did
you like it?
I loved it.
Me too.
I loved it.
Me too.
I'd like to catch you up. ABC is a television network. A television is something that you watch programs on, mm-hmm, and a network used to be a collection of those shows that you would watch for free without subscription.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
I don't... Long time ago. Ancient past. But I thought it was really good. I thought they portrayed... It's a story of a surgeon.
He's an autistic savant.
Right. And so he sees the world... It comes from the makers of House. And so it's the same kind of thing where, you know, House was just a jerk. Mm-hmm. This guy is autistic. And so he doesn't relate well to people and says, you know, the honest thing at all times. And there are people that, you know, don't want him in the hospital. And he's just remarkable. He's just remarkable. And it in the first episode, it really kind of is really fascinating because it says that the chief of staff is trying to justify to the board why he hired him. And he said, because how long ago was it that we didn't have women doctors? How long ago was it that we didn't have black doctors?
Mm-hmm.
This guy is off the charts. And because we can't relate to him, we're going to say, no, he shouldn't be a doctor. And it's fascinating. I wonder if it will help us look at autistic people differently.
Yeah, I hope so.
Do you know when they said autistic savant?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what in my generation?
No, they call them idiot savant.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
How? Look at the change there.
Somewhat politically incorrect now.
Right, but so we called autism idiot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know if autism was deemed to be.
I'd never heard of autism idiot when I was growing up.
I'd never heard of it either. The only thing I know idiot savant from was Rain Man.
Yeah.
In what, 92 or 94?
Right.
Whenever that was.
Yeah, and I wonder if...
And that's what he was.
I wonder if that was autism in that movie.
It probably.
It would have been known as autistic now.
I think so. I think he'd be on that spectrum, yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Anyway, Pat, welcome.
Welcome to my world where we finally have gotten to the point where you can invite a drag queen wearing a five red tip demon-like horns and clown face to read stories to children at libraries. It's finally. A beautiful world. It's finally here, and we worked real hard to make this happen.
Right.
And so
well,
finally...
it did happen to the Michelle Obama Library. It did happen
It's
there.
At the Michelle Obama Neighborhood Library in Long Beach, California.
Yeah, so that's good.
And that's really good. Following his drag queen story hour...
Who's?
His drag Who's? Queen story hour... Well, Xochi Mochi is his name.
Okay.
He posted...
Xochi Mochi?
Yeah, Xochi Mochi.
Okay.
With an
is that
X.
His is that
with an X, not
that,
a Z.
Yeah, is that his real name?
Yeah, well, it's his...
Who are you to judge?
Who am I?
Yeah.
I don't question.
All right.
He posted an Instagram photo of him reading to the kids, and he said it was one of the best experiences I've been given as a drag queen. It's so important to have representation and normalize all the letters in LGBTQIA+ in our everyday lives.
Yes. How many times have we said?
Wait, there's some new letters here.
There are new letters.
There are new letters. Can you go over some?
Lesbian,
yes.
Gay,
yes.
For G.
Bi, got
bi,
it. Trans, queer, got it.
Queer.
Got it.
Intersex.
Mm-hmm. Which is...
it's your...
Just don't act like you don't know.
Yeah, please.
Don't insult the audience.
No, I don't know.
I mean, this is incredible.
He wants us to talk down to the
audience. Just talk down to me. I don't know what intersex means.
No, we are not going to lower ourselves to
explain
it.
We're not
going to.
Okay, so...
And then there's asexual. So
asexual.
And the plus, because...
Everybody else.
How long is this thing going to get before we run out of space?
So plus is... So they have capped it.
At plus.
A.
It looks at
for
least
the time being,
so they're like Xochi.
So they're like, you know, plus because there's so many letters.
So many
and then
others.
Then we get into the what is it, the Cyrillic alphabet,
and the metric system.
And the metric system, right.
Yes,
and then the Greek alphabet. So we could be here all day.
So I think this is just an effort now to see if there's any outrage we won't accept for our kids and tolerate. Is there anything we won't tolerate them around our children? These are four-year-olds. One of the little girls has butterfly wings on her back as she's looking up at this person with five frightening demon-like horns, white clown face, dressed in an evening gown, reading, you know, it's okay to be different to them. I mean, you know, now it looks like we have a Satanist drag queen in clown face and evening gown reading to our kids.
What was he wearing?
A beautiful evening gown.
But who is he wearing?
Oh yeah.
I think it came off the rack.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Xochi Mochi shops
really,
on the rack?
Now you push
on
it
the
over
rack.
The edge.
Now we won't tolerate it.
Now if it's off the rack, I don't think so, Xochi Mochi. I've got one for you.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen this, and I think we have audio. Make sure we have audio. Yes, we do. The neo-Nazis that has come out.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is in England.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Wilshaw. He's not just Jewish, but he's also gay. Which complicated things a bit with his long-standing membership in the Nazi Party.
Yeah, it was like decades, right?
Yes, yes. He's leaving the movement now, and he's coming out as gay. Here's cut one.
When I was 18, I think it was just after Lewisham, I joined the National Front. And then it got a bit tasty.
Was it exciting?
Yes, yes. You've got one thing in common, you've got the same belief system, same enemy as well, and it does unify you. It was Jewish people, immigrants, the far left, anybody who imposed a left-wing agenda, plus anybody who disapproved of what I was doing.
Right. So anyone who disapproved of what he was doing, which would turn out to be all the people around him. Here's the next cut, his horrible dad.
At what point did, well, Nazism start to be attractive to you?
I must have been about 11 years old, 11 or 12 years old. My father was very right wing, and I think I took it a bit further than him. Because even though I didn't get on with my dad,
a bit,
I wanted to basically emulate him to a certain extent. And father was, when he wasn't knocking us about, he wasn't there. He was quite a lot of the time he was absent.
Yeah.
So we didn't see much of him. When he was there, he was used to wield the rod quite severely. Mm. Used to get beaten with a riding crop.
Okay.
He was an ex-NCO from the Royal Horse Guards, so you imagine he wasn't predisposed to any sort of liberal ideas of how to bring up children.
So he was beaten with a riding crop, so he immediately became a Nazi.
What else are you going to do? Where else do you have to turn?
Right. Mom's Jewish. You notice he didn't talk about mom there.
No.
I got into my dad. Your mother was Jewish. How did she feel? I didn't think of her that way. Oh, okay. Hitler did. I don't know. I don't know. You missed that part.
You can feel hopeless as a parent, and this is a good example of it. It's like you're Jewish, and your kid grows up to be a Nazi. Like you really can't. You cannot affect these kids.
Imagine
enough.
How she felt. How did that happen? Without any joking, how did I raise a son that became a Nazi? I'm Jewish.
Yeah, it's weird to hear a gay Jew Nazi talking like he's the fifth member of the Beatles, too. It's hard to take him seriously. It is.
Maybe that's it. Maybe the Nazi party would be better off if they all had English accents. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was thinking about rounding some people up today.
So pleasantly, you talk about that genocide.
The Equifax breach impacted 143 million consumers, and it just got bigger. Now they've added 2.5 million to that list. And if that's not bad enough, Yahoo announced that their 2013 breach impacted all 3 billion user accounts. That's triple the number of the original estimate. Now, this is what you really need to know. Once your information has been exposed, it doesn't just go away. It can be sold onto the dark web for months or years after a breach. They can use it to commit crimes in your name. They can buy houses. They can steal from your 401k. They can steal from your bank accounts. I mean, it's gone. Now is the time to get protection. Sign up for LifeLock today. I remember when LifeLock came out maybe in the 90s, and I thought, nobody, who needs that? Here's my social security number. And now it is imperative that you have somebody lock down your and your children's identity. LifeLock uses proprietary technology, easy for me to say, to help detect a wide range of identity threats. And if there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock is the best in the business. Go to LifeLock.com. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. Get 10% off if you use the promo code Beck. 1-800-LIFELOCK. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Operation Barbecue Relief was in California last week. They've been operating now, I think, in 7 states, and they have provided now over 500,000 meals just in the last few. 565,000. They served 53,000 meals in California at the wildfires. They are headed home to recharge soon and be ready to support when called on again. We are proud sponsors at Mercury One. One of the first things we do is we go in and we feed the first aid and first responders and the people who are, affected by these things.
Stunningly, we've aligned ourselves with a barbecue charity.
It is stunning.
It's a real leap for us.
It's amazing, though, because you don't have any food. And yeah. I mean, this is warm, good, nutritious food And we were able to help provide relief from the hurricanes and the fires and everything else because of you, and we appreciate that. We want to let you know you can help us out. We do our annual fundraising ball, and this is to cover the expenses of, you know, vetting these organizations and accounting and everything else and some of the other projects that we're working on. So when I get on the air and I say, hey, 100% goes to this hurricane, 100% goes to this fire, you know that 100% goes there. We just need some operating costs. So every year we do a fundraiser, and we're doing a couple. One, we're giving away a brand new 2017 GMC Canyon pickup truck. I just bought a pickup truck from these people. This is a remarkable truck. Anyway, tickets are $100. There's a total of, I think, 7,500 tickets that are going to go out. You can buy as many tickets as you want. 7,500 are available. And you could win this brand new pickup truck. We're going to be drawing during our gala fundraising event, which is An American Cowboy is the theme this year. Saturday, November 18th. You don't have to be present to win. If you would like for more information, you can go to mercury1.org/M1, the number one ball, M1 ball. And also, we would love to have you come to our ball itself. Aaron Watson is going to be performing. We're honoring somebody that is pretty remarkable. I don't know if I'm allowed to announce it yet, so I'm not going to, but we're honoring somebody that is coming. And
well, I think I see what you're getting at. Thank you. That's you can, no, say, yes, it. You not, can say it. It's fine.
No,
to
it's not you.
It. It's
you okay. Have nothing to do with it. Oh. So, but there should be some really,
can I come?
This is going to be a really amazing night. If you would like to come, you can get your tickets there for mercury1.org/M1ball. Tanya and I will, be there, and I don't know if we're hosting it or if we're just there. I'm not sure. They don't ever tell me until I actually show up. Senator Cruz and Senator Sanders did a debate, and I think this is the debate that needs to happen. You know, you have a socialist and a constitutionalist. If we can, let's play the cut. Sanders versus Cruz must be defeated. Bernie tries to compare the Republican tax plan to Robin Hood.
The other thing they do in order to pay for their tax breaks, you know what they do? They cut Medicaid over a 10-year period by $1 trillion, throwing 15 million Americans
off of the health insurance. Was the microphone really far away from
them? They cut Medicare by $470 billion. So what this is, in fact, is a proposal, which is right on the floor of the Senate right now. Senator Cruz and I go back tomorrow. We're going to continue the debate. It is a Robin Hood proposal in reverse. They're taken from the working families and the poor.
This, remember, this is the great hope for the Democratic Party. Oh, awful. Now, listen to Cruz respond.
In his opening, Bernie invoked Robin Hood. And I got to say, I think Bernie fundamentally misunderstood that story. Robin Hood was robbing the tax collectors who were collecting too much taxes from the working men and women and taking it for the rich. In Bernie's analogy, it is the Democrats who are King John and the Sheriff of Nottingham. And Robin Hood is saying, tax collectors, stop hammering people who are struggling, who are laboring in the fields, who are working. Stop taking it to the castle to give out to your buddies. You notice Bernie's going to tell you all this free stuff he's going to give. And the Democrats love corporate welfare. They love to rail on the insurance companies. What they won't tell you is that under Obamacare, the profits for the insurance companies doubled. When you have Washington giving out goodies, the big guys do great. It's the little people who hurt. It's the young people. It's the entrepreneurs.
Ted Cruz, this is the debate we should be having. Capitalism, constitutionalism, or socialism? Let's have that debate and forget the clown show in Washington.
Glenn Beck.